guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We just rifled through your calls. Murray, were you going to say something there?
No.
You smacked your lips like you had something. I'm still sort of, this is like in a, I feel like I'm in a sort of a deadline mode because the NHL trade deadline is on Monday.
Right.
And the Rangers scratched all their players last night. We've had another trade today. Derek Brassard, the center in Ottawa, goes to Pittsburgh for a first-round pick.
I promise I won't be subtle if there's something to say.
Well, so, I mean, here's the rule. You know the rule. What's the rule with the breaking news button?
Yeah. Only if it's for real. And
Hold on.
Blue check.
It's just the opposite.
All right.
This is why I'm glad I did this.
All right. Thank you. I would have thought to my journalistic integrity, I'd want to make sure.
No, go somewhere else for that.
Okay.
Hit the button first.
Yeah.
And then ask questions later.
Okay.
All right. This is.
That's the button.
And the best part of it, Hook, is that you'll get all the flack as the update guy giving the information. See?
You'd rather beg for forgiveness and ask permission. Like that sort of thing. You'd rather get the bump of the sounder.
Is Johnny Gaudreau a Bruin yet?
No, but this is what I'm talking about.
It's a good example.
Don't be shy. You don't need to bother to look for the blue check mark.
Okay.
We'll get to the blue
Johnny Gaudreau, not a Bruin.
We'll get to the blue check mark thing after you deliver the news. Okay.
I'll see what I can do for you.
So this is why anytime you put your light on or Murray sort of edges up to his seat, I'm like, because I'm not on Twitter or you know, I'm not on the internet. So every time you make a move, I'm like, what?
No, I'm monitoring, though.
Okay.
You're very edgy.
Mike, do you give up the farm, the franchise, if you're the Bruins, Mike? For what?
Okay,
one perfect. Cup run where they could get eliminated after the first round, Mike? Then what?
Maz is off today. You get Murray in the Maz chair. Here's Pat in Boston on the deadline. Go ahead, Pat.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
I can.
All right, sorry about that earlier, babe. So I think the value of the Grabner trade last night and the Brassard trade is actually pretty fair. Given the past couple of years, the asking price for these rental players has been enormous. But I don't think that you can't afford to get Ryan McDonagh. I mean, just for the contract situation alone, next year you're probably going to want to sign him after giving up, you know, the Rangers are asking for the moon. And, you know, Charlie McAvoy, you're going to have to pay that kid like P.K. Subban money. So I'm out on him. But I think with this Holden trade, they have 9 defensemen on the active roster. I mean, I would be okay with moving Torey Krug for my guy Mike Hoffman up in Ottawa. And I think you could do that deal because I now think that they might get rid of Carlson. They got rid of Phaneuf. You know, why not see if they want Krug?
So, I mean, that's an interesting one. It is. They, meaning the Bruins, love Krug. They love him more than I do. They love him more than the fans do. But the Bruins look at Krug as like a core guy, locker room guy, you know, he's represents our program and blah, blah, blah. I'm not as in love with him as they are.
Yeah, me either.
But would Ottawa be interested in a guy like Torey Krug? I don't know. That's $4-5 million for a guy who's what should ideally be a third pairing defenseman? I don't know. Ottawa's looking to trim money. The thing with Erik Karlsson, I mean, one of the best players in the league, one of the best players on the planet, he's a free agent after next year. And he's going to want paid the highest. He's going to want Connor McDavid money. He's going to want whatever McDavid just got, $12 million a year. He's going to want that, and he's probably going to get it. He's probably going to get it as a free agent. Ottawa.
They're gutting it to the bone.
That can't sell out playoff games and has a whole owner where the ownership said maybe we aren't long for here a while ago. They can't afford him. So if you're Ottawa, do you trade him now and get value for him and start over and at least get something as opposed to losing him for nothing in a year and a half? Carlson's an interesting case. Not for here. To get Erik Karlsson here, you'd have to give up McAvoy.
Right. Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. So you're not doing that.
I don't think you're doing that. But Ottawa's in an interesting spot. Hoffman, sniper. Would be tremendous next to Krejci. Tremendous. We've got Andrew in Dorchester on the Celts here on Agenda Free Friday. Hi, Andrew.
How you doing, man?
We're good, Andrew. What do you got?
How you doing? All right, so I'm talking about the Celtics. And so basically what the Cavaliers. So the Cavaliers, right now, they know they got the two, Clarkson and Larry Nance. Now, everyone that I know is saying that, you know, the Cavs are better now. But I'm telling you, I watched them last night, and I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything great. They got a fast-paced offense. Okay, that's how they are. They got the King James. But I just don't see how those two players are going to actually impact them later on. I think it's actually going to be good for the Celtics. I want to see what your take is about
that. Yeah, I mean, Look,
I need a few weeks of a sample size here. It's only been a handful of games. And last night, I thought it was kind of telling for the first time, you know, their first loss since they put this new Cavs team together, that defensively it looked like it did before they got guys like Hood and Clarkson. It looked pretty lazy towards the end of that game, at least in the second half of the game, mostly. Like, and then LeBron started to shut it down, too.
I want to see how they keep it together after a couple losses.
Yeah.
I want to see how LeBron starts handling it when he starts looking at his teammates cross-side. Guys miss a couple shots. They don't get back on D late in the game, etc. They lose a game at home they should win. Let's see a couple more of those. How the whole thing holds up. Because LeBron hasn't been able to handle it the last couple of years when things go wrong.
This is why I didn't go full Big Jim worry once, you know, they started to win some of these games, including against you on Paul Pierce night. I need to see a bigger sample size. And I think the Celtics are more indicative of what they are in the first couple of months of the season. They've lost their defensive identity the last few weeks.
Cam and Taunton on an Agenda Free Friday. What do you got, Cam?
That moment the other night, I mean, I stayed up to watch the entire game. It was up till 2:30 in the morning, worth every second. I mean, I felt American after watching that, mainly because I said this to Murray that night. I'm not a big person who likes sports schadenfreude, but when it comes to international hockey in Canada, if I see Canadian hockey fans in tears, I'm a happy guy. Because I know Canadians, for the most part, are very nice people. When it comes to international hockey, they all turn into Montreal fans. They all think they're above it. They're snooty. They're rude. They talk down to everybody. And the fact that they're going to leave this Olympics with no gold medals for either side makes me as happy as possible. When it comes to international hockey, Canada can't lose enough.
I agree.
That was a phenomenal moment.
Then throw curling on top of it, too. We beat them in curling. We beat the Canadians in curling.
And that's, like, even more of their sport than
hockey
at this
point. You're talking about, like, you don't have anything up there other than ice. And we're beating you on ice sports? That is, like, I do. I enjoy that as well.
Can Vermont take him down in maple syrup production? Like, that would be even... Yeah, maybe the next thing.
We even kicked your ass in stupid curling. What losers?
I had to live vicariously through Cam and others, because that's the stuff that I live for. The sports schadenfreude, the tears of others. And again, he's right. Canadians care a little bit too much about hockey. 2:30 in the morning that thing ends? I can't do it. Like, yeah, I got to watch it the next morning and see the highlights. But that killed me that they put that thing on that late.
Peter in Jamaica Plain has a thought on the Red Sox. Hi, Peter. Peter.
You bought it.
Peter.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Pete.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, Michael, the Red Sox went out and signed the second best hitter in baseball on the free agency market. One of the probably top 10 hitters in all of baseball. And they didn't give up anything. All they did was give up money. And I don't understand where, you know, this seems like there's a lot of negativity toward that deal.
Because
I don't get it.
Because people look at his whole career, Peter, as opposed to just what he did last year. People also look at where he did it last year, which was one of the great launching pads in the entire league.
And they also gave up probably flexibility heading into next year's free agent market, where the true great hitters are.
Well, and the head of baseball operations looked at Giancarlo Stanton and shrugged and said, yeah. I'm good.
Well, so Hook is also down on the J.D. Martinez signing. Why? Why are you down on it?
Because I don't believe in him. I don't believe in him. I just don't. You don't. I mean, what he did last year, he didn't even do it over the course of the entire season. He did it over the last 4 months or 3 months of the season. So talk about a small sample size. And yes, this guy is tweeting at me with his RRC plus W minus whatever.
Your tailpipe,
and here's what I'll tell you, and I said it in our email chain. I know that people are going to give me all these ridiculous statistics of VORP plus a baseball park adjusted. Just tell me, who's the better hitter? Stanton or J.D. Martinez? If I put these two guys both in front of you and say they'll cost you the same, because, by the way, they're costing more or less the same to their two teams, and if you say, well, they didn't give up anything, well, yeah, neither did the Yankees really give up much to get Giancarlo Stanton. So if I put these two guys in front of you and say you can have either one, who picks J.D. Martinez? Who?
Thank you.
Anybody? Anywhere? At any time, other than this nincompoop here on Twitter with his advanced statistics, maybe Carmine. I know that they retired Carmine. Maybe some fan ended up with Carmine in his basement, and he's the one who's telling me Martinez is the better guy. He's not. He is not the better guy. The Yankees are a better team than you. They got better-er than you in this offseason, so don't tell me otherwise.
How many teams came after him? None. Arizona a little bit, but Mike... Maz. Nobody likes him.
Maz, go on vacation.
That's all correct, though. And the casual baseball fan...
There's no
fan,
reason why they should have signed Martinez. They didn't need him, Mike.
They couldn't have picked this guy out of a lineup before he signed him. And now, oh no, he's as good as Stanton. He's one of the best hitters in the league. We'll see. Let's see him pass this physical first.
The guy's 30 years old, Mike.
Can we start with the physical? Can we start with that?
Yeah, he's still
past
not
his
even
prime
signed
already, Mike.
And by the way, he's a better fielder than Stanton. J.D. Martinez is not a better fielder than me. I don't think he's a better fielder than anybody.
Who cares?
But this is the thing. Now that he's a member of the Red Sox, it's great. It's fantastic. He's a better fielder, better hitter. He's better at everything. He's so good. And we got him for the low, low price of $50 million over the next 2 years, which if he's
going to be another disaster.
He's gone. And
every
if he's
free agent
bad,
they sign,
you
Mike.
Got him for longer.
Would you let Maz speak?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's going to be another disaster. Every free agent they sign, Mike, is a disaster.
We continue with your phone calls on Agenda Free Friday.
You're listening to Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Maz.
Who cares?
Felger and Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
It's different to me, so it's good. We didn't talk about anything baseball-wise, not a thing.
Yeah.
No, we just, me and JD have continued to be friends ever since we were teammates in Detroit. You know, we've continued to check in on each other. You know, last year when he had the 4-homer game in L.A., I remember talking to him after that. He's always asked me about Astro and my son, so we've just remained friends and we didn't talk anything about baseball.
Shaughnessy wrote something today on David Price saying give him a chance.
Yeah, the title is, all he is saying is, give Price a chance. And he sat with David yesterday and mostly talked about baseball. In the spirit of starting over, on the day of the first spring training game, I approached Price in the Red Sox clubhouse this morning, actually Friday morning, asked him if we could talk a little baseball for a change, said that would be okay.
Take that, Beetle.
First the arm, the elbow, feel the way it felt before the scares last season.
It feels good. Feels normal right now. I think coming back last year at the end, pitching the amount of times I did, back-to-back, 3 out of 4 days, tougher than starting once every 5 days.
There was a lot of baseball stuff, and really by the end of it, all Shaughnessy is saying is it's a new year, give him a chance, don't be so hard on him. People like you, me, really the rest of us.
Oh my God, I'd rather stick needles in my eyes.
Everybody.
I was vultures here. Asked him about the Patriots. I mean, it's kind of, for Shaughnessy, it's a bit of a fluff piece and almost too positive at the end of it. I was like, who wrote this?
Well, good. I won't be reading it then. Look, do you want to give David Price a chance?
Do I have a choice? I mean, really, there's no choice. I mean, if you want to talk about a guy who the team really needs to be good for them to be good, that's David Price. It's not Hanley Ramirez. They were good before, after, and, you know, Hanley, whatever. Hanley Ramirez has never been good. David Price has shown that he can be great. And so that's what you need to look at. You need to look to a guy like that to actually be what he's been before rather than Hanley Ramirez to be something he's never been.
Yeah, even if you don't like David Price, you want to root for him because there's a chance if he pitches really well and the market rebounds, he'll opt out and you won't have to deal with him anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a win. You get a good year out of him. He gets out of here. He gets out of here. You know, he hates you. You hate him. Everyone gets divorced. Everyone's happy.
Because it's never really going to change. And here is the other one telling thing to show you that's never going to change with David Price and his attitude about being here. Did anyone, Shaughnessy asked, did anyone try to get through to you when you were so angry about everything last year? Quote,
you guys will never know what went on, period. That's the bottom line, and I don't want to get back into it and open it all back up. Let me go throw a boring no-hitter in spring training, and we could talk about that.
Ugh. And Shaughnessy follows up, swell.
Play like dog do.
You know, because the attitude's never going to change. Mm. He's wearing a mask right now. He's trying to put a happy face on this.
My problem is with you.
That's right, Shaughnessy.
Oh, yeah, no, we hate the Yankees. I'm just telling you what you guys want to hear.
We'll never know what went on last year. I mean, he played baseball for $30 million on a team that went to the playoffs. What horrible thing could have befallen him in that time that we, yeah, as common people, will never, ever understand.
Eckersley was making fun of him for the amount of time he takes between pitches. That's what happened.
Right. And so when I read that, that's the first thing I think of. Oh, so you still think you're right with this little beef that you had with Dennis Eckersley last year. So it's never going to change. So go out.
Yuck.
The best case scenario, like you just said, pitch well so the team can be successful. And then you pitch well so you can get the hell out of here.
Okay. That's on the board here.
A couple of deep breaths, a couple of spits, and we'll have our answer.
See, Dennis Eckersley is a big fan of Big Jim Murray. Murray had been ragging on David Price for months, years, for his routine between pitches, which goes like, what?
Pick at the jersey, pick at the jersey, stare in. Nope.
Spit a couple times, take a deep breath. Now what?
Deep breath, spit. Nope, that's not the one.
One, two, deep breath. Second deep breath.
Yeah, it's a fair assessment.
Basically,
what are you going to do now, Mr. Price?
Eckersley basically stole Murray's bit and did it on Nesson, and it got back to David Price, and that and that was the night David Price.
Didn't want that. Not that. How about that? Change up.
Man.
And that's the night David Price jumped Dennis Eckersley. It had nothing to do with some comments about Eddie Rodriguez. Nothing to do with it. Dennis Eckersley was doing a Jim Murray thing on David Price's routine between pitches.
I was honored. Imitation's the sincerest form of Flaherty.
Yuck.
He just doesn't have the...
Or Flaherty.
But whatever. He doesn't have the voice inflection, Murray. Here's Fred in Canton. Back to the calls here on Agenda, on Agenda Free Friday. Hi, Fred.
Hey, guys. Listen, I was watching the Premier League last weekend. A handball goes up. The whole place freaks out. But guess what? The ref made a call. The ball went down. The game kept playing. And soon enough, 5 seconds later, there's an action. I forgot about it. I translate that to the NFL. If every time a quick catch or a play happened, the network wasn't clamoring to show me 6 replays on how it might not be a catch. I mean, give me a replay of, like, the wire shot above the QB's head. Show me a replay, but it doesn't have to be a close-up replay showing me how potentially that play wasn't a good play. And I think the game could be a lot better.
You know, it's just gotten too fine-tuned. You know, it's again, we as viewers and consumers have to get back to a place where we're okay with a missed call or a close call that goes against you and it was a bang-bang play and the ref may have got it wrong, but it was really close and, you know, what are you going to do? Like, that's part of sports. That's part of sports. You can't, sometimes the catch and the ball is it's so finite, it's just a millimeter on the ground against a blade of grass. And so it may have hit, it may have moved just a skosh, but who could see that in real time? And you don't expect the ref to see it in real time. So maybe he missed the call, but it's okay. Like, I mean, that's how it was our entire life.
Yeah, but we're not, unfortunately, we've walked through this technological door. We're not going to go backwards with this kind of thing.
This is my fear, that no one's willing to go backwards. Now that you have the ability to look at every blade of grass, they're going to look at every blade of grass, and it's just it continues to make it worse. For all the quote unquote clarity this stuff brings you, does anyone feel better about these decisions?
No,
of course not. Does anyone feel better about the officiating? No. So even though you have it, has it made it better?
No, there'll be more cameras and more minutiae.
It's actually made it worse because of the number of times you see clearly what they should be seeing, and they still get it wrong.
And how many times, despite all the technology, does it still feel they get it wrong?
Yeah.
So. You know, but the horse left the barn a long time ago. Derek in Foxborough on Agenda Free Friday has a Patriots thought. Hi, Derek.
Yeah, given that McDaniels drafted Tim Tebow when he was in Denver, I think you would want a more mobile quarterback. So I think they should draft Lamar Jackson, the kid out of Louisville. He can run, he can throw, could be the next guy.
So let me ask you about this, because I said yesterday that if you're not drafting the next guy, then don't draft a quarterback at all. Like, I think Maz had something. Like, if you want to take a flyer in the fourth or fifth round on someone, go ahead and do it. To which I said, well, what's the point of that? You know, either go draft the next Garoppolo or pass and build players around Brady. If you're going to draft the next quarterback, then he's got to be in the first couple rounds for that to be really, I think, viable as a franchise quarterback. You don't find those guys in the fifth. And then Maz said, well, what about Lamar Jackson? This kid, he won the Heisman 2 years ago at Louisville. What if he slips to the third, fourth round?
I mean, if they believe in them, believe in them, then fine.
Is that like a Russell Wilson equivalent who did go in the third?
I mean, Mike Vick said that he was better than he was when he was at West Virginia. I mean, and Mike Vick was phenomenal as soon as he came out. I mean, he's mobile. He's got a cannon for an arm. Down year last year because he had too many turnovers, too many picks. But I don't know. I look at these quarterbacks.
His mobility? Is he a run first guy, or does he run to, you know, to look downfield and to keep the play alive to throw it downfield? Or is he a tuck-it-and-run guy?
Last year, he was more of a run-first guy.
So the tuck-it-and-run guy has no shot. I mean, that's not an NFL quarterback. Yeah, the tuck-it-and-run guy, by definition, sucks. If you want to be quote-unquote mobile, like Aaron Rodgers or Garoppolo or these guys who just keep the play alive.
And 2 years ago, that's what he was like. That year that he won the Heisman, he was like that. And he looked like, oh, this kid's going to be an absolute stud. Last year, he was down. I look at all these guys. I don't see them as any kind of slam dunks. And more than anything else, it's about building around the Brady window now, taking advantage of why you still have him here for the next few years. Don't waste it on a quarterback. You're thin at so many other areas, especially defensively.
Mike and Woburn with the NHL trade deadline thought. What do you got, Mike?
I like that. I like that trade for Pittsburgh, by the way. The Broussard trade. That kind of you're going to see the HBK line 2.0 with a better center instead of Nick Bonino.
So I mean, they go 1-2-3 at center: Crosby, Malkin, Broussard. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's the best third center they've had since they traded Staal. They've got their defense is better this year because
Letang's back.
Healthy. Letang's healthy, so you don't have to go out and get Ron Hainsey to fill in and sort of go with as many second pairing D as they can, just absorbing ice time. Pittsburgh turned themselves into a real contender right now. I'm glad the Bruins passed on Grabner. The guy is a black hole when it comes to the puck. The puck's going in there, and it's either getting turned over or he's going to shoot it. He's a rich man's Vetrano. I'd rather have Vanek. Vanek has had more assists every season of his career than Grabner has had. Grabner's never had a season over 20 assists.
Grabner has 25 goals and 6 assists, I think. Six assists!
Literally. He's a puck shooting machine. Like, you're never going to get the puck back from him. And Krejci, to score, Krejci needs that chemistry with his line mates. He's never going to be a guy that's just going to be like a Craig Janney who feeds the sniper, you know? And can we ask a question? Why is Edmonton letting Peter Chiarelli work this trade deadline? he just came out in a press conference and said, we're not going to blow it up this year. Peter, that's because it's already been burned to the ground. You went in there with the number one overall pick, with a no-brainer to choose, the most talented generational player available in the past since Sidney Crosby was on the market. Chiarelli gets him. And since then, literally, it's been him throwing kerosene over every... Have you looked at his trades?
I try not to.
So, the Hall for Larson trade,
right.
The best part of that trade is watching the Oilers fans wait for the rest of the trade to come through. they're like, it can't be just one for one. Same with Jordan Eberle. And that's not even his worst trade. I know Bruins fans are upset because we passed on Barzal. Barzal was sitting there, right, for Chiarelli to take. All he had to do was push the button and take Matt Barzal. He trades his first and second for Griffin Reinhardt, a guy who might as well be the defensive equivalent of Zach Hamill. You can't have a guy less suited to write the franchise than Peter Chiarelli. Mike, if your grandmother plows her car into a Dunkin' Donuts, do you take the keys away from her, or do you let her try to back it out? That's what the Oilers are doing right now.
I wish we cared about Edmonton, but Chiarelli,
it's a great visual.
I mean, again, just not to go scratch this itch, but I just, Mike brought it up. The amount of arguing that you had to go through with the Bruins writers to tell you that Chiarelli, it was time and may not be as good as you think that he is. Or Claude, maybe it's time for a change there. And just and if you want to go even further, the Louis Erickson thing, all these guys, DJ Bean and all these guys that they just glommed onto. What is Chiarelli went to a place with, again, the greatest single player to come out of the draft in over a decade. And all the cap room in the world. And it's basically napalmed that Edmonton team.
It's uncanny what's happened there.
Claude Julien goes to a Montreal team that was in first place last year when he took over. And now I think they're 22 points out of the playoffs or something. I'm going to miss.
They just shut down Shea Weber for the year with an injury. I mean, it's been a mess.
But I'm just talking about just what has Chiarelli done? What has Claude done since they left here? You're getting a little clearer idea that maybe we weren't dealing with Scotty Bowman here. It's okay to move on, and maybe that just be a little bit of a lesson when this happens again, which it will. Cassidy will go cold, and Sweeney will go cold, and eventually there'll be time for changes, and it's okay. It's okay to look at that landscape and say, sometimes you need to change. But it's just interesting to see what has happened to the golden boys of the local hockey writers here, Chiarelli and Julien.
Felger and Maz.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Maz.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports
Hub. Russ in Plymouth on the Bruins. Hi, Russ.
Hi, how are you?
Good, man.
Listen, I know there's been a lot of talk about trades with the Bruins. I can't believe there's any talk about defense. They got the number one defense in the league. I think you're heading in the wrong direction there. I believe Pittsburgh is still the team in the East to beat. They're heating it up now. They're going to be very tough in the playoffs, and they have a lot of firepower. You got two guys out there that are available. Just depends on, what you got to, give to get them. But I like Tavares, and I like Vanek as well. Vanek has been a pain in our neck for many years. If we can get him on our team, that would at least save us from being tortured from him any further. But Vanek and Tavares.
Tavares, you can't put those guys in the same breath. I'm sorry to cut you off. Tavares is going to cost you Charlie McAvoy. And so take that. No, Tavares is a
Yeah, no,
one of the best young players in the league. I stop. And I don't even know if he's qualified as young anymore. He's in his prime. Either way, that Tavares is a different consideration. Vanek for a cheap for a mid-round draft pick? Yes, like that because I think to me Vanek doesn't upset what you are. He's a pure rental, he's a gun for hire, he's been a million places, he can put the puck in the net, and if he can't, you sit him, you put him on nine, and you don't really disrupt anything. And hopefully Vanek is someone that you could get for less than what Grabner went for. Grabner went for a second round pick. Vanek at, you know, how old is he? Can you look him up?
Yeah, Vanek is...
is he close to 40?
No, 34 years old.
Oh,
he just
it?
Turned 34.
Well, he feels older than that. But either way, you know, he's 34 years old. He makes good money. You know, Grabner was real... He was made nothing. What is Vanek?
Vanek's making $2.6 million.
Well, that's maybe not great money. Well, either way, I mean, what can I tell you? Vanek, to me, feels like a guy that should be more affordable. He should be more affordable than a guy like Grabner.
Well, he's more affordable than Rick Nash, for sure, in terms of the money, and around the same age. And you said earlier you're out on Nash because of...
I just think he's been a dog. You know, half of his career, he's been a dog. And the other half, he's been good. You know, he's delivered as that elite power forward. But I feel like whenever I hear about Rick Nash, half the time, it's about his team bitching about why doesn't he do more. You're the biggest, fastest guy out there. You're a physical force. And we don't see you half the time. You're invisible. And I feel like that's fully half of the commentary with Rick Nash. He's just sort of been a disappointment. He's got a little bit of the dog in him.
And a guy like that can definitely has the potential to be the turd in the punch bowl. And, well, so, and I think that I think that management, in terms of Neely, Sweeney, and even Cassidy, I think that they take this mix that they have pretty seriously because you keep hearing them talk about it.
He also comes in as the highest paid guy on the team. You know, prorated, not that you're paying him 7-whatever.
7-9.
Okay, I think that would make him the highest paid guy on the team. And so he sort of carries himself like that, too. Like that, like when they talk about chemistry, that's the kind of guy that I think that you would have to keep an eye on. Now, like, and also he would cost a first-round pick. Jimmy Stewart, you want to give up a first-round pick for Rick Nash?
No.
Me neither. If he's cheap, and he's super talented, and if he has his head screwed on straight and gives you great effort and plays to his ability, then it's a home run. I mean, he's elite. But what if he doesn't? Now you've given up a first-round pick. He makes all that money. It's Rick Nash. It's like, I don't know.
What if it's Spooner and a conditional first rounder? In other words, if they make the cup final, the first round pick goes to the Rangers.
I love you.
Hmm.
I love you because it did. Is that one of these Jimmy Stewart just out of nowhere thing?
No, I have no. My hockey sources are in Las Vegas now. I got nothing.
He's honest. So,
I can tell you all about the Golden Knights, but you don't care.
A conditional pick. Yeah. Because the condition is cup finals. If Rick Nash takes me to the cup finals, yes, he's worth the first round pick. Right. Yes. And Spooner, I would be the first guy out the door for me because I think he has no future here.
Because I think they have $2 million in cap space. Spooner is two and a half. So that gets you to half of the salary, which the Rangers could retain. And you can get the player.
Well, it's prorated. You know,
it still feels low on New York's behalf. I don't know why they would do that. I mean, this is obviously a full rebuild that they're going with here. So they're going to want youth. They're going to want picks. A conditional pick and Spooner.
If they don't get a first from anybody else. I mean, that's, you know. Yeah.
Or maybe their GM liked Ryan Spooner when he was here.
Right. So Jeff Gordon is a former Bruins guy. I don't know if they cross. I think Gordon's been gone long enough where I don't know if he was.
For the sake of my discussion, say he was here for it.
Fine. So, but Nash kind of scares me. Vanek feels more like a plug-in guy. And I think that's what they should be in the market for. Sort of I don't know. You're not going to be bitch about Rick Nash, though. Because his ceiling's higher than anyone else that we're talking about. Ernie and Franklin on the Patriots. Hi, Ernie.
Hey, how long do you guys, you and Murray, both think, you know, the Brady-Belichick window is going to exist for? I believe it's just one more year. They got one more shot at it. And then it's going to be totally different. What do you guys think?
If I had to guess, it's one more with Brady Belichick together. And then you get another two with Brady and McDaniels, if I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's what I would go with.
And maybe more. I mean, if Brady's got a, like I told you before, Brady can't retire now. He can't. It's no longer an option. No, when you help force the team to trade the guy that's going to take over for you and the next guy for 10 years... You got to give him three. You got to give him three, at least three. Brady has to give him at least 3 years for, you know, to justify trading Garoppolo.
But I definitely think the Bill is out after this one.
And I think Bill is not long for this. I think Bill is not long for this situation anymore.
I still wouldn't be shocked if he pulled the plug on it between now and the beginning of the season. for some weird reason, you know?
I mean, we know what the reason would be.
Yeah, but it all does feel delicate to me.
I just don't think he, I mean, I don't know. If I'm guessing, he's not leaving him in the lurch, because he, at the end of the day, he does not want to be Parcells. He doesn't. He doesn't want to make late decisions and screw the team over, especially when his kids are still working for the team. I think that's a whole dynamic there with his kids still here. And if Bill blows it up on the way out, how does Steven and Brian exist? And would they have to relocate? I mean, I'm sure they could get jobs. Andy Hart said to me on TV last night, those two kids could go work for Patricia in a second because Matt would hire them. Or some other Belichick Bobo around the league would hire them. So they'd get jobs. But I don't know. Do Brian and Steve want to move to Detroit?
Houston with Bill O'Brien or something like that.
I bet they like it here, you know. So I think that's a whole consideration of Bill going nuclear on the team. He doesn't want to do that because he doesn't want to hurt his kids for the future.
How often do they get out of Foxborough? Do you think they're really hanging out down at Quincy Market?
No, but I think they live in the Boston area and they're in Nantucket, and I think they have a nice life.
Right.
I think they have a nice... I would take that over Detroit or Houston. I could tell you that much. Mike in Connecticut has a thought for us on an Agenda-Free Friday. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I called 2 years ago about the Red Sox uniforms. When they had the away jerseys with the black Boston embroidered on them.
Yes.
And I said to you, don't you think the Red Sox would want to put more red in the Red Sox? And the next day they changed their uniforms.
Oh my God! Look at you. So what does that have to do with today?
Well, so today, I'm calling and make another suggestion.
Okay.
What I'd like to see is like the Philadelphia Phillies have on Sundays at home. They have a uniform change with the blue caps and the red tee. So I'd like to see the 75 uniforms on Sundays at home.
The 75. So you mean without the belts, the old Sansa belt, polyester, that whole thing that the teams went to in the 70s?
I'm a fan of the aesthetics of athletics and the Red Sox, like the Red Sox uniforms, clean, beautiful, home and away. Although I liked when they had the black lettering and numbers. It was like,
I'd like to see the White Sox go back to wearing shorts.
Since we're on this stupid topic.
Those 75 uniforms are the worst they ever had, though.
Oh, Agenda-Free Friday, Michael.
The whole league went to those ridiculous polyester, no belt, you know, sans a belt thing. You know, it's just atrocious. Awful. I don't like the red the red lettering on the road jerseys. I so much prefer the navy blue.
Same.
So much. And what I really want is the block lettering like you had in the mid-80s. You know, like almost the Boston Celtic road font, you know, like that sort of that Boston as opposed to the cursive Boston. But at least when they went to the Navy a couple of years ago, I could get away with it. I don't like that they went back to the red. I don't like the red. Don't.
Yeah. I like that mid-80s look with the blue.
I want the blue. I want the black or blue on the Navy. Like that's
Do they still have the ice cream seller white hats?
It's a more classic look. What?
The Red Sox had the white hats for a little bit in the, it was either late 90s or early 2000s. They were white with a blue brim and a red B. They wore them like on Sundays. They looked like they were selling ice cream.
I do not remember those, but that is going to be, I know it's an Agenda-Free Friday, so everything's on the board. That is no longer on the board.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mass.
Smith in motion left against the man coverage. Foles drops back, settles in the pocket. He lost one to the end zone left for Jeffrey. He leaps and he makes the catch in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, Philadelphia.
You're going to have to get Rowe out of this game. Malcolm Butler, two straight series, not out there on the field. But they are picking on Eric Rowe. Dude, Foles didn't even read this. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He hits. And he's got the tall receiver out there, and he's just going to throw it up to him.
And there was just a little more info on the Butler thing today from Devin McCourty. Devin McCourty was quoted over the weekend in at a charity event in New Jersey, saying that they knew all week that Butler wasn't going to play. And what he clarified today on Sirius NFL Radio was that they knew he wasn't going to start. He said, quote, "We never really knew. The starting part we knew," he said. "But him not playing, ... As Bill said, it was a coaching decision." Then he was asked specifically if Butler not playing hurt them defensively. He answered, quote, "A lot hurt us, but we didn't stop anything defensively. We can go down the list of Hall of Famers we could have used." So I still chalk this up as another player coming out against the decision. I mean, anytime a Patriots player says anything other than we did what we thought, you know, would be best for the team and, you know, we trust in all Belichick's decisions, and you know, we
all the stock answers you typically get from any of those players.
So, you know, and Devin McCourty as a captain, you know, I'm sure this must go up Bill's tailpipe, don't you think? That one of his defensive captains is just doing interviews all over the place and is freely answering questions. And again, not that he's giving you every state secret, but he. Every time Devin McCourty mentions it, it's a headline.
Yeah, and initially, you know, we disagreed about this. Go ahead.
And so Bill must be looking at it going, shut your mouth.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, you know he hates anything like this because he runs it like North Korea.
Okay, so this is exactly. So this is what I'm telling you. Just the very fact that McCourty is willing to answer questions and go maybe halfway towards telling you the truth, I think is significant. It tells you that.
It's proof that he got it wrong. They all think that he got it wrong.
The locker room thinks Bill got it wrong. I think that's what, even though McCourty's not saying it, quote unquote, the fact that he's even entertaining the question, answering the question, allowing a headline to come out every other day about something that he said, and even giving specifics, we never really knew. I mean, the starting part we knew, but him not playing, as Bill said, it was a coaching decision. Like, if I'm Belichick, I'm looking at that going, Devin, shut your mouth. Don't say anything.
Yeah, especially the last line. As Bill said, it's a coaching decision. Yeah, that's right. I'm the coach. I'm the one in charge. I'm the one that makes those decisions. Shut up.
So again, McCourty was very supportive of Butler over the weekend at that charity event. Here he gives more life to this, and I just think this is just further indication that the locker room was not on board with that move.
No, and they shouldn't be. And, you know, the thing over the weekend, too, yeah, at the latter half of the audio clip, McCourty's, you know, a good teammate towards Malcolm Butler and, you know, is wishing him the best and everything. But as I first heard that, I thought he was kind of toeing the company line. Oh, well, no, we knew he wasn't going to start.
See,
and we knew he was going to play.
See, I think McCourty giving Butler a big personal endorsement is another slap in the face to Bill. Because whatever Bill did there was based on a character assessment of Malcolm Butler. I mean, we can say that, right?
Yeah.
Whether Butler was just being a jerk all year or being sloppy all year or unprofessional all year, or he did something before the game.
And it was the last straw.
Or whatever. It was something about Butler's character that landed him on the bench. And all Brady and McCourty and Hightower and all these guys have come out and do is support him as a person. That, to me, again, is a slap in Bill's face.
Yeah, because, look, they know. He was there. He was in uniform. We get it. Okay, Devin said we knew he wasn't going to start. That part's understandable. To not put Malcolm Butler on the field at any point in that second half for one defensive play, Mike, it's indefensible. And we feel this way as fans and media. Of course the players feel that way because they feel like they just cost a Super Bowl.
Here's what I mean to say. Anytime a player doesn't answer the question with, we've moved past that.
They haven't moved past.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, because that's what they would say with any other thing. We've moved on from that. It's on to 2019. It's on to 2018. Excuse me. It's on to the next year. It's on to the next game. It's on to training camp. I'm just worried about getting in good shape for training camp. Like, that's how they would answer these questions. Instead, you know, again, when you play the very first clip of the charity thing, Jimmy, just play the very first part of the Devin McCourty charity clip where the reporter, the gal comes up and says, hey, do you mind if I ask about Malcolm Butler? He's like, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
You want to talk about Malcolm Butler not playing or no?
I'll talk about anything.
Okay, so Malcolm Butler.
All right, I'll talk about anything. Like, I think just the fact that they're talking about it tells you that how uneasy the locker room was with the decision.
Well, yeah, because it gets close to the fourth quarter. These guys that have busted their ass all year for a defense that really took a lot of lumps, especially early. You're in the Super Bowl, got a chance to win the thing. You're looking around like, wait a minute, Johnson Batamosi, Jordan Richards. Why is Pat Chung on the third quarter? What's happening? So, Bill, put him in just for a few plays. And he never does. Of course it stings. Of course it hurts. And it's good that it does, because he got it wrong. Bill got this wrong.
Is this thing going to live like this all offseason? I mean, it'll live forever, but is it going to live like this all offseason?
Well, it did with the Seahawks. Okay, you can make the argument that Bill is a better coach than Pete, and we get that, but I think these things can infect the locker room and hurt a team.
For Bill's own sake, does he have to give us something so the questions stop, you know, so at least...
No, he has to give them something. I don't care if he gives anything to, you know, us idiots on the radio or media or beat people. He has to have a kind of come-to-Jesus moment with some of those players, or at least his captains. Brady, McCourty, the important guys, Dante Hightower, those guys, yeah, he owes some kind of an explanation or a, hey, I screwed this up.
All right, so that's one of the things we're talking about on an Agenda-Free Friday. Michael in the car, your thoughts?
Hey, guys, let me paint a picture for you and see what you think. Let's say Bill's loved this relationship with Robert that he's had this whole time that he's been there. Everything's went well. Now, for the first time, the biggest decision really he's had to make, his quarterback, is being made for him. What if it's not being made by Bob? What if it's being made by Jonathan? And now Bill views this as, is this what it's going to be like going forward? And his reaction is, all right, if you want to get all Jerry Jones-like, I'm going to send this kid to a situation where I don't care about the return. I just want him to succeed so I can thumb my nose at you and say, all right, that's what you get.
So that's,
you just let Aaron Rodgers and Steve Young walk away.
Yeah, that's the fear, that he partly did that to thumb his nose, which I can't totally rule out, because I think you just saw in the Super Bowl with Butler that he...
He could be stubborn.
He has, you know, sometimes things get in the way of his decision-making, like all of us, because he's a human being, you know, like the rest of us. So I don't rule out the thumbing the nose thing. The Jonathan dynamic is real. I mean, it's just, it's life. It's happening. I mean, Robert is a certain age, and hopefully he lives forever. But as he gets older, he's going to sort of...
Get away from the day-to-day and
cycle
enjoy
out,
his life.
Right, a cycle out a little bit of the everyday there. You know, and so Robert's not going to be an everyday presence as we go forward.
He has to in 2018, though. As long as Bill's still here for this 1 year, and I think it's this 1 year, I'm sorry, you can't leave yet. You're part of this equation. You can't leave. No.
Well, and so as you go forward, you know, I mean, let's say something comes up. Well, I got to, you know, and Bill needs to make a decision. Well, I got to check upstairs. You know, Bill doesn't write the checks. He can't just make carte blanche every decision. He's got to run it upstairs. And when he runs it upstairs, it's not Robert up there, because Robert's in Palm Beach or Manhattan or wherever. And it's Jonathan. And that happens over and over again. And Bill says, well, wait a minute. You know, I work for Robert, not Jonathan. This isn't who I signed the contract. You know, like the whole thing with the Jets again, with Leon Hess. And, like, I think that's a real thing that you got to look at going forward with this.
No, definitely. The guy's been here near 20 years. He's used to a certain way it's run. I'm sure he's comfortable with it, obviously, and it changes. Yeah. And I know Bert Breer's talked about the same thing, too. This dynamic is something to keep an eye on. It's why, you know, when Robert Kraft said around the Super Bowl, hey, you know, everyone's going to check their egos, paraphrasing, but along those lines, yeah, Robert, you too. Like, you can't leave yet. You can't leave yet. You know, the troika can't get broken up yet. You have to stay.
Felger and Mass, the Sports Hub.